On November 18th, 1995, the great violinist Itzhak Perlman came on stage at the Lincoln Center in New York City. And as was his usual, he made his way across the stage very slowly and carefully. Because you see, when he was a child, he had polio. And so he wore locked braces on both legs, and he walked with crutches. So he made his way over to his chair, and then he sat down, put the crutches down, and unlocked the braces, got himself in position, reached for the violin, put it under his chin, and then he nodded to the conductor and began to play. But just a few bars into the performance, something happened. One of his violin strings broke. It snapped so loudly that everybody in Lincoln Center heard it. And they all wondered then if Perlman would have to stop, put his braces back on, pick up his crutches, leave the stage to either go get another violin or another string. But Perlman didn't do any of that. Instead, he closed his eyes, he paused, he took a deep breath, and then he signaled to the conductor to begin again. The orchestra began playing, and Perlman began playing where he had left off. And that night, he played with more passion and power and purity than he ever had in his whole life. Well, there was a woman in the audience that evening who later wrote about what she had witnessed during that performance. She said, "You could see him modulating, changing, recomposing the piece in his head. At one point, it sounded like he was detuning the strings to get sounds from them that they had never made before. When he finished, there was an awesome silence in the room, and then people rose and cheered. We were all on our feet, screaming and cheering, doing everything we could to show how much we appreciated what he had done." He smiled, wiped the sweat from his brow, raised his bow to quiet us, and then he said, not boastfully, but in a quiet, pensive, reverent tone, "You know, sometimes it is the artist's task to find out how much music you can still make with what you have left." Well, this is a perfect illustration of what it means to always do our best. And that is the fourth agreement in Don Miguel Ruiz's wonderful book, The Four Agreements. And so Itzhak Perlman absolutely did his very best, even in extremely adverse circumstances, and he blew everybody away. Nevertheless, doing our best doesn't mean we have to be a superstar like Perlman, or that we have to be perfect, or that we have to knock ourselves out trying to be perfect. It simply means that we do our best with what is before us. And our best changes from moment to moment and from day to day. Ruiz writes, "Your best will depend on whether you're feeling physically tired or refreshed. Your best will depend on how you are feeling emotionally. Your best is going to change over time. And as you form the habit of practicing the four agreements, your best is going to get better." So doing your best is really about giving it your best shot. That's how I think of it. It means bring your whole self into what is before you so that you're fully present and pursue your intention with great purpose and integrity. I'm sure you can relate to this, times in your life when you were very focused. And didn't you find that as you did your best, that you felt within you a great sense of wholeness? You felt even an upsurge in self-respect and in self-love. So what happens when we don't do our best? Well, here's an example of what can happen. Purely hypothetical. Imagine that you sign up for a class that requires that you read a certain book for the class. But you decide you're not going to bother with that. You figure you're going to get something out of the class no matter what. And your instructor and your classmates will forgive you, which they will. But look what happens inside of you. You arrive at the class and you notice that your classmates all have their books. You remember that they've read the assignments that you haven't read. And immediately you feel a little different. You feel a little bit less than. And then as the conversation begins and the class starts, you feel really hesitant to speak up or to ask a question because you haven't read the material. If this continues on as your imagination begins to go in that direction, pretty soon you start wondering if people think poorly of you for not having read the assignment. And one step further is imagining that they're shooting you disapproving glances because you came unprepared. And you see, it's just that simple to take what could have been or started out to be a very dynamic, lively learning experience and turn it into your own little private hell. So by shortchanging yourself, which is really what we do when we don't do our best, right? We shortchange ourselves. You've traded what could have been a very pleasant experience into something very unpleasant, something very even hurtful to your self-esteem. It's all because of your choice, how you chose to show up for this. And this really is the crux of the whole book, The Four Agreements. Underneath every one of the agreements is this message that we are powerful creators and we create our own reality through the choices that we make. And we make choices all the time. We choose what we are going to think, what we are going to believe. We choose what we're going to put into this movie we're making of the story of our lives. We choose how we're going to act, how we're going to behave, how we're going to relate to what happens to us. Always making these choices. We're in our movie, as we talked about, and everyone else is in their movie. And if we make the mistake of thinking that everybody else is in our movie, where we are the star, we begin to make false assumptions. We begin to take things personally that were never intended that way. And we begin to think and say things that aren't true. We essentially create our own suffering just by how we're thinking about things. But if we wake up and realize that we're creating this whole thing, we remember that we have a choice. We can create a different reality. We can trade in our false beliefs and assumptions for a higher understanding. That we can actually move from this experience of struggle or pain into a calmer, easier experience. You see, we are powerful, powerful creators. You know, sometimes in church we sing the affirmation rock, and it says, I am a powerful, creative, spiritual being. Remember that? Well, it's the truth. We're powerful, creative, spiritual beings. But we seem to kind of forget that. Maybe we don't really know it yet. And just as Clark Kent is a disguise for Superman, we're these powerhouses, superheroes, who don't even know the power within us. We forget that we have so much power. You have the power to create your own life, your own happiness, your own outlook. Well, this, I believe, is what Jesus was alluding to when he said in John 10:34, is it not written in your law that you are gods? That came from Isaiah, but Jesus was reiterating it. You are gods. That's an unbelievable, isn't that just an incredible thought? But it's true. He was saying that you are divine beings with creative capabilities. You create your reality. And even though he didn't use these specific words, create your own hell or heaven. Well, certainly Jesus beckoned us to heaven, the kingdom of heaven, right? That was the centerpiece of his teachings. And he wanted us to live in that kingdom, in that state of consciousness, with a great sense of fullness and joy. And so he said things like in John 10:10, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. And in John 15:11, I tell you these things that my joy may be in you and your joy be full. You know, no matter what impression we may have gotten through our previous exposure to church, Jesus, in my view, was all about joy. He was all about living in the kingdom and enjoying your life. And so through his mind-blowing parables and aphorisms and miracles and teachings, he was essentially saying that you can create greater peace, love, and joy in your life just by thinking differently. Just by thinking differently. He did everything he could to shake people up so they would think differently. Well, I had an experience many years ago, let me emphasize, where I realized that I had some power to make my own life happier through the things that I was thinking. So one day I essentially woke up to the fact that I was creating a lot of unnecessary drama in my life. So when I was a teenager and a young adult, I had the very unfortunate habit of making things worse than they really were. So if one thing was unfortunate or if something, you know, sad happened, I would promptly consider all of the things that were wrong and all of the things that were sad, and pretty soon I'd be arriving at the conclusion that it's never going to get better, this is how it is, all is lost. You know, I was miserable, dug myself in deep. Well, then I began to going to Unity and learned a little bit about Buddhism, which you may recognize in this story. And so one day my sister called me up, and she shared with me some unfortunate news about a relative, and I can't even remember what it was. But I had the thought, as she was sharing it with me, now this is the sort of thing that I would typically get all worked up about. I would turn this into a big deal, how awful this is, you know, how wrong and unjust it is, life isn't fair, who knows what I would have come up with, but I would have gone on and on about that, chimed in with my sister who was kind of on that wavelength too. But this day, I remember it so clearly, I had the thought, you know, I just don't want to go there. I just do not want to put myself through that. I am not up for that. I am not up for creating all that turmoil. So I think I won't. And I didn't. So I listened to what my sister had to say. I took the action that I needed to take. No more, no less. And the episode came and it passed. And you know what? It felt great. It felt great. What a relief. It was so much easier. I didn't have to go through all that. That was the reality that I was making up. You know, similarly, all of us can make choices that make our lives easier, happier, and more fulfilling. Don Miguel Ruiz writes, "If you're going to create anyway, if you cannot avoid dreaming, then why not create a beautiful dream? If you can believe in your limitations, then why not believe in the beauty and power of life that's flowing through you? Life gives us everything, and everything in life can be a pleasure. Why not dream a beautiful dream?" So these four agreements that Ruiz provides to us are sort of the roadmap to dreaming and living in a more heavenly experience. And so let's take a moment just to recap the four agreements, since this is the last of the series. So the first one is, be impeccable with your word. Or as I like to say, be impeccable with your words. Think before you speak. What a concept, right? Think before you speak. Because if you don't, you're going to make assumptions, take things personally, and say things that you wish you hadn't. So just take that little bit of pause so that you don't say anything that isn't true, kind, or necessary. Second one, don't take anything personally. Yeah, easy, right? Don't take anything personally. But if you remember this analogy that we use, that everybody's creating their own movie. Everybody's in their own movie. You're not the star of their movie. They're the star of their movie. If you remember that, you can more easily not take anything personally because it really is not about you. It is not about you. Let it go. Next, don't make assumptions. It can be so tempting to think that we know everything, that we know what is happening in other people's lives, that we know what they're thinking, we know what they're doing, and then we assume that they know what's going on in our minds, can read our minds, and on it goes. Those assumptions can really throw us off. So don't make assumptions. Instead, ask questions. Seek clarity. It's very, very simple. And the final agreement is, always do your best. Do your best not so that you can reach some outer standard, so that you can meet somebody else's expectations, so they feel good about yourself. So you just know that you've given it your best shot. Whatever the outcome, doesn't really matter, because you know you did your best. And in particular, you can do your best to honor these first three agreements. Well, it's not easy to change in these ways, to learn these new habits, is it? So I know some of you have been trying it and working on it, which is fabulous. But it takes some time. It takes practice. So practice, practice, practice. Or as Richard likes to say in the joke that he made up about the duck who played at Carnegie Hall and was asked how he got there, and he said, quactus, quactus, quactus. That quacks Richard up every time he tells it. So practice. And know that sometimes you're going to succeed and sometimes you're going to fail. And that's okay. The question is not whether you ever fall down, but whether you get back up. So I have a little video clip to share with you that illustrates this quite beautifully. It'll become apparent what's going on, but this is really about a runner named Heather Dornadin. She's number 170. It doesn't matter that you can't hear that clearly what they're saying, but just watch.
The 600 meter underway. Heather Dornadin of Minnesota finished second in this event a year ago. She was in lane four.
And Dornadin is probably going to be your favorite. She actually won the NCAA championships in 2006 in the 800, but she only won one Big Ten championship in the 2 years.
Three laps in this event, 600 meters, three times around the 200 meter track here at the Fieldhouse.
What a bold move by Fallon. She's looking very confident, and the Penn State runner is just running amazing today. She did win her heat in the 400, but ended up taking fourth overall.
That's Fondor moving into the lead, a sophomore from Penn State. Dornadin running second.
Dornadin last year scored 23 points for the Golden Gophers in their Big Ten championship, so they're really relying on getting a lot of points from her this weekend, and she's just coming by Fondor now in the home stretch, heading into the bell lap.
Dornadin falling down, gets up quickly, but that's going to cost her. Lucky she wasn't injured.
Her teammate just went to the front, though, so they may be able to recover from that. And Dornan is flying down the backstretch.
She is catching up.
She is going to catch Fawn Dorr, and she may catch the leader. Wow.
Wow. She's got Fawn.
This is a gutsy effort by Dornan.
Unbelievable.
Can she pull it off? She's moving to third. Dornan coming down the stretch from the outside. Dornan coming on strong. Dornan all the way. Dornan. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Unbelievable.
That is amazing. To fall in a 600. I mean, this is basically a sprint. I mean, this is an...
How about that, huh? Isn't that something? You know, when Heather Dornadin hit the ground, she faced a critical choice point. Was she going to stay down and be defeated? Or was she going to get up and do her best? We face choice points like that all throughout our lives. And something happens to us when we're challenged. Are we going to go under and be defeated by it? Or are we going to rise up and do our best? As life sends challenges your way, as you undergo hard times, I invite you to think about who you are in this regard, to remember the times that you've overcome difficulty in the past. And if something is really plaguing you, ask yourself some questions. What story am I telling myself about this? How is that story making me feel? Do I really know that this is true? What assumptions am I making? What am I taking personally? What have I fabricated out of my own imagination? And most importantly, how might I see this differently? You see, when we ask that question, we open up the possibility of really changing our thinking and changing our lives. So I invite you, as you continue to work with the four agreements, to always do your best. Give it your best shot, whatever that looks like. And may you discover that you've created your own little heaven on earth. Let's prepare now for our meditation. I invite you to take a deep breath in and then release, 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 and let go. And feel this great peaceful energy that surrounds you, that moves through you, that is you. Imagine yourself with whatever may be on your mind, with whatever concerns you may be facing, to simply let them go for now. Just lay them aside. And just feel the presence of God filling you up. Know how precious and how loved you are. Know that you are never alone. That this higher presence is a very part of your being. It is who you truly are. In difficult times, or even as we work on honing a new skill, we can tap into this inner divinity and find all the strength, all the wisdom, all the courage that we need. I invite you to breathe deeply and release into this great knowing, into this soothing truth. And know that what we have heard about with Itzhak Perlman and Heather Dornadin and others who overcome, that we too have that in us. That we too are God's powerful, powerful creators. I invite you to take that into your own heart and open to what is yours to create or shift or know. in the silence. In this centered place, we feel gratitude begin to well up within us. How grateful we are for life, sweet life. How grateful we are for our own divine potential, the possibilities unfolding for us, the opportunity to dream a beautiful dream and to live it. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And so it is. Amen.